Ranga, Long Vishnu Viraya Krishna Vrishtaya Vidhaya, Vimahe Bhakti Vidhaya Swain Tanavane, Namaste, Sarasatunde, Ven Goravani Vicharne, Nirvishesha, Shinivadi, Paskadya, Vidharne, Om Agyana Vinandasya, Vinanjana Salakaya, Chatur Vulitam Yena, Tasmai Shri Gurvena Maha, Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shigara Shiyutabhara Kamalam Shigaram Vaishnavam Scha Shri Rupam Sagradatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sarvaitam Savadukam Pridana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shiva Sakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karna Sindo Dinabanda Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhana Sita Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Pancha Kalpa Dhruvyascha Kripa Sinubhye Vacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pranitananda Chaitvaitkadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 20, Lord Vishnu's appearance in the sacrificial arena, page 22. Ata,
Ata,
Ata. Well, it's a very long word. Anyway, you can know it. Ata vamri gri jai shuru kala dilo kayan. Unate
Padras Vishantam Shitimamsa Unate
Vinyasta Hastagram Uranga Vidvishaha
Vinyasta Hastagram Uranga Vidvishaha
Atavamri Atavamri Yashu Kara Vilokayan
Atavamri Yashu Kara Vilokayan
Parasprishantam Shitim Amsa Unyate
Parasprishantam Shitim Amsa Unyate
Vinyasta Hastagram Auranga Vidvisha
Vinyasta Hastagram Auranga Vidvisha
Ata
Ata
Thereupon Avamrinshya
Avantya
Wiping
Ashrukala
Ashrukala Tears in his eyes
Tears in his eyes
Vilokayan
Vilokayan
Observing Atripta
Atripta
Not satisfied
Not satisfied
Grigocharam
Grigocharam
Visible to his naked eyes
Visible to his naked eyes
Aha
Aha
He said
He said
Purusham
Purusham
Under the Supreme Personality of Godhead
Under the Supreme Personality of Godhead
Para with his lotus feet. Prishantam. Just touching.
Chitin.
The ground.
Amse.
On the shoulder. Onate. Raised. Vinyasta. Rested. Hasta. Of his hand. Agram. The front part. Aranga. Vidishaha.
Of Garuda.
The enemy of the snakes.
Translation
and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Supreme Personality of Godhead stood with his lotus feet almost touching the ground, while he rested the front of his hand on the raised shoulder of Garuda, the enemy of the snakes. Maharaj Prithu, wiping the tears from his eyes, tried to look upon the Lord, but it appeared that the king was not fully satisfied by looking at him. Thus the king offered the following prayers. Purport. The significant point in this verse is that the Lord was standing above the ground, almost touching it. The residents of the upper planetary systems, beginning from Brahma Loka, the planet where Lord Brahma lives, down to Swarga Loka, the heavenly planet of Indra, are so advanced in spiritual life that when they come to visit this or similar other lower planetary systems, they keep their weightlessness. This means that they can stand without touching the ground. Lord Vishnu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but because he lives in one of the planetary systems within this universe, he sometimes plays as if one of the demigods of this universe. When he first appeared before Prithu Maharaj, he was not touching the ground of this earth. But when he was fully satisfied with the behavior and character of Maharaj Prithu, he immediately acted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan from Vaikuntha. Out of affection for Prithu Maharaj, he touched the earth. But he rested the front of his hand on the raised shoulder of Garuda, his carrier, as if to prevent himself from falling down, since the Lord is not accustomed to stand on earthly ground. These are the symptoms of great affection from Prithu Maharaj. Receiving this fortunate position, Prithu Maharaj cannot fully look upon the Lord due to ecstasy, but still in a faltering voice, he began to offer prayers. Translation again. The Supreme Personality of Godhead stood with his lotus feet almost touching the ground while he rested the front of his hand on the raised shoulder of Garuda, the enemy of the snakes. Maharaj Prithu, wiping the tears from his eyes, tried to look upon the Lord, but it appeared that the king was not fully satisfied by looking at him. Thus the king offered the following prayers. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pradastaya Buddhaya Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Dhanamane Namaste Sarasatunde Vaurabhani Sacharne Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskatyade Sitarne. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Paritranaya Sarunam Dhinashaya Trijasvitam Dharma samstapanar gaya sambhavam yuge yuge. In order to protect the faithful and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish religious principles, I advent myself millennium after millennium. So here Lord Vishnu is coming and to the sacrificial fire of Maharaj Prithu in order to give some appreciation and some recognition to Maharaj Prithu, how he's properly fulfilling the duties of a king. Prithu Maharaj was born from King Vena. After King Vena was cursed by the Brahmins and he left, then great disturbances took part on this planet. Because this planet is probably much greater than what we think of this tiny Earth planet. Even it mentions during the realm, Mara Yudhisthira, and he sent his brothers, the Pandavas, to different areas. He went beyond what we know as this barred varsha. He went into other varshas in Jambudvipa in order to conquer them. So being the king of this earth didn't mean that necessarily this small area that we're considering now to be this earth planet. In any case, Prithvi Maharaj, as we know, he was a ruler of much more than just this little planet, since he took his chariot. Priyavrata. He took his chariot and carved out the different dvipas. And anyway, Prithvi Maharaj personally told the earth that either you cooperate or you're finished, which is more than most kings can do. In any case, Prithvi Maharaj was an exalted king because he manifested the purpose of Krishna's incarnation. He protected the pious, he annihilated the miscreants, and he reestablished religious principles. So therefore, Lord Vishnu was very much pleased with him. And he came to the sacrificial fire. Now, when he was at the sacrificial fire, it mentions here that he was so pleased that he did something extraordinary, more than he usually does, that according to the verse, he apparently was almost touching, or in the purport it says he was actually touching this earth planet. And generally speaking, Prabhupada says, when Lord Narayan comes here, as he came as Krishna, there's no question of his not touching the earth planet, that his lotus feet were all over Vrindavan. As a matter of fact, he didn't even walk with shoes on. He walked barefoot. Not only was he touching the earth, this planet, but he was touching it with his bare feet and leaving his marks everywhere, his footprints. Similarly, Krishna's associates also didn't wear shoes, including the cows. Krishna wouldn't wear shoes because the cows didn't have shoes. And therefore Krishna refused to have shoes. And Srimati Radharani also didn't wear shoes. Therefore she painted her feet with red lac because the dust of Vrindavan is very dry. And it dries the feet out. So in order to protect the gopis' feet from drying out, they paint it with red lac. But here, what Krishna is doing is extraordinary. At least Lord Vishnu, he's actually apparently touching the earth, because as it says here, he generally takes the role of the demigod. Although he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, still, in order to encourage the demigods, because he's taking the role of the maintainer of the universe, there are three Purusha avatars, now there are three Guna avatars: Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva. Lord Brahma creates the universe, Lord Shiva annihilates the universe, and Lord Vishnu, he maintains the universe. And when he's in the universe, he takes the role of the maintainer, one of the avatars, Guna avatars, and he acts, as it says here, like a demigod. Of course, he's always the Supreme Person. Since Vishnu expands himself as Paramatma in everyone's heart, he's obviously taking more of a role than just a demigod in this universe. But still, in order to encourage a demigod, he generally plays like one of the demigods. And therefore, when he comes to the earth planet as Lord Vishnu, then he doesn't touch this earth planet. Apparently, the demigods don't want to lower themselves and get affected by the earth planet because they have a higher nature. And therefore, they remain above the earth planet, retaining their status and, well, in goodness. This earth planet is known as a planet of fruitive activities. Fruitive activities means the earth planet is a realm where mostly passion activities go on. Although, obviously, this is a special earth planet, special place, because Vrindavan is here, and Mayapur here, and Jagannath Puri, places in India which are transcendental to the realm of fruitive activities. But generally, the earth planet is known as a middle planetary system. And therefore, it's a place where people accrue karma through fruitive work, either to go upward to the heavenly planets, or to go downward to the hellish planets, or to come back again and work more fruitive activities, either to elevate oneself, or to degrade oneself, or even to find some position even on the middle planetary system where your activities are not completely pious, and they're not completely sinful, and they have to have some place for you, so they put you here. Every single planet, every single place in the planet is just suitable to fulfill our karma, to give us the results of our karma. Actually, every moment, everything is perfectly arranged so that we can get our karma, and thus we become a devotee. Then Krishna takes charge of our karma to encourage us to make progress in devotional service. For a pure devotee on the highest level, then there's no question of karma, there's no question of experience of this material energy. One is actually completely on the spiritual platform, has not only no karma, but no experience in the material world. He sees everything as part of the spiritual world. Although he may play the part of an ordinary personality in order to teach people how to act and work in this material world, as Krishna himself does when he comes here, still a pure devotee is completely beyond material experience. But as long as one is in this material world, then Krishna, if one is a devotee or even an aspiring devotee, then Krishna arranges our lives in such a way is that we're able to not only experience something of the reactions of our past activities, but also we can become enlightened and encouraged to take shelter of Krishna and make advancement in pure devotional service. Now, for Lord Krishna to touch, or Lord Vishnu to touch this world, means that Krishna is always ready to reciprocate with his devotees. Even though he's taking the part of a demigod, and therefore in order to encourage the demigods that this world is not a place to come to, and that one should remain above this material world, remain in the platform of goodness. Although the demigods, if they don't make further advancement, they also have to come down to the plane of fruitive activities again. But as long as they're demigods, they want to be associated with this mature world, especially identifying themselves as part of it, because they're above it. But in order to reciprocate affection with his devotee, more than trying to please the demigods, Krishna is more inclined to reciprocate with his purest devotees like Prithu Maharaj than simply to give some encouragement to the demigods. And therefore, apparently he comes and he puts his lotus feet on this planet, but then he's so expert that he also holds the shoulder of Garuda just to show that it's only temporary. He's not going to do it all the time. He's not accustomed to do it. He's just doing it to show some affection to Prithvi Maharaj. And Prithvi Maharaj is so expert, so intelligent, that he understands the Lord's mind, and therefore he tears ecstasy in his eyes, seeing how Krishna is expert at reciprocating with his devotion and at the same time maintaining his connection with the demigods and not disappointing them by apparently coming down and manifesting himself as just on this planet. So that's one of Krishna's qualities. He's known as Daksha. He's expert. He can accomplish so many things at the same time, all for the satisfaction and encouragement of his devotees. And therefore we're given Srimad Bhagavatam so that we can see examples of practical behavior, how devotees and Krishna himself act in expert ways in order to advance the cause of Krishna consciousness and also satisfy expertly the different aspects of Krishna's mission. To protect the pious, to annihilate the miscreants, and how Krishna establishes real religious principles, all the different aspects of religious principles, in such a way as to enlighten us and encourage us and direct us in a way that we can act in this material world, at least in principle, try to get Krishna's mercy and intelligence from the Super Soul, from Guru Sadhana Shastra, so that we can act in this material world and also become daksha, expert at adjusting things in such a way for not only our own personal spiritual advancement, but also for the spiritual advancement of others. And to show an example that not only suits the particular time and the place and the audience, but it actually can be an example for others in the future if seen properly according to time, place, and audience and circumstance. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam has to be seen also not only from what the activities are, but also from the context in which the activities of Krishna and his devotees are performing their activities. Otherwise, we may take an example which is not really applicable for our time, place, and circumstance. For instance, King Prithvi Maharaj, his father, was cursed by the Brahmins to die. Now we ourselves may think we're Brahmins and we may not like the government. We may start cursing them to die. But that may not be the example that's being shown in the Bhagavatam. That's our example to follow. So we have to see according to time, place, and circumstance, and then we can fully appreciate Krishna's expertise and the expertise of his devotees. And that way we can see all these different parts of the Bhagavatam in a way that can be practical in our own lives. We can apply, hopefully, part of our own devotional service and help ourselves go forward in not only preaching Krishna consciousness, but becoming expert in instructing others also what they can do in Krishna consciousness. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments?
Thank you for the nice class, Maharaj. Many things we read in Bhagavatam, I find them very difficult to understand. For example, when you mention about the different bharshas in the fifth canto, like how can we understand it? It seems like, or when we understand it, the earth was so much bigger when Maharaj, at the time of Maharaj Yudhisthira, and now so much smaller. How can we understand it?
You mean, well, first of all, you probably can understand it. Unless you want to stay around for the next yuga. When people may have an opportunity to understand it. Right now in Kali Yuga, we're quite limited. Obviously, Krishna, if he wanted us to understand it, he wouldn't make us so limited in Kali Yuga. So we don't have the qualifications. all we could do is speculate about it, or we could accept it without rejecting it or blindly accepting it, because it has really nothing to do with our own spiritual lives. In other words, by understanding it, we spend our devotional lives trying to understand this point, we'd probably be wasting our devotional life, because it wouldn't help us necessarily to surrender to Krishna. Therefore, what we can understand from the Bhagavatam is meaningful and helpful in our own spiritual lives. And we have to accept our limitations and understand that if Krishna wanted us to understand it, He gave us the intelligence within the heart to understand it, or the experience of it. Just like He wanted Arjuna to understand what the universal form was like. And therefore Krishna revealed it to Arjuna. Now, what do we understand about the universal form? Now we make it a point of our lives to understand the universal form, which is much even greater than this varshas or whatever else. Then, even if we understood the universal form, what would be our benefit in spiritual life? But we can understand some principles of the universal form, for instance, which are applicable to our lives. Like, for instance, Arjuna says, Kalosmi Shayakrit Parvido Lokansa Mahartamiha Parvita. Krishna says, Time I am, the destroyer of all the worlds. So this is something within our realm of experience, time. And He's engaging everyone. So if you look around, you can see time is engaging all of us. So this is also applicable. But wanting to see how Krishna eats the Kshatriya soldiers, how fire is coming out of His mouth, how Brahma is sitting on the lotus flower. We could do it, we could spend lifetimes trying to get that experience, but it would be just a distraction from our actual mission in life.
Thank you so much. With regards to King Prithu, we hear that he was churned from the legs of Vena. I'd like to know do we have any correlation that and cloning? How do we explain? I've heard someone trying to say that's the origin of cloning.
I don't know what cloning is. Cloning is when you take one gene or something, you try to inject it into another gene in order to make another species or something. I don't know. I think the sages were a lot more sophisticated than our present scientists. Yes.
Thank you, Shri Mahārāj. As we know that Shri Nāvindhāma, and they are pure, but still we see that some people who live there, they drink and they eat meats. So how do we understand the meaning of Nāvindhāma?
Well, Shri Bhaktivinoda Kaur says that there's a thin material layer over the Dham. Mm. And that's where these people are living. The real Dham is beyond a mundane person's experience. Mm. I think Sadhguru Guru once gave the example, just like if you were told that there's a certain place in, say, downtown Melbourne. So if you went there, you'd see, you know, that place. But actually, if what you're talking about is saying is actually in the basement, that's where we want to go. Just by going there, you're not really seeing the basement or all the other floors that are there. So people are living on the first floor, for instance, and they don't know about all the other floors that are actually there. So they're living in the material world, doing material things, and there is an opportunity even the dhams to do it. Although, as Prabhupada said, if you act like a dog or a hog in Vrindavan, then it's a special place because the dust will purify you. Well, at least you'll take birth as a hog or a dog in Vrindavan and get purified by the dust there. But Vrindavan is not meant to become a dog or a hog. That's not purpose. I remember one day I was sitting there, I was chanting japa with one devotee and thinking about how they weren't paying attention, chanting properly. And then I realized that I wasn't, by doing that, I wasn't chanting and paying attention. Then I remember I walked out where I was, and all of a sudden I got an experience of actually what the Dhamma actually is for a moment. And it was very much different from my normal perception of what I think the Dhamma is. So there's a whole different realm of experience beyond sometimes what the conditioned soul may think is existing there. Anything else?
Just to make that subconscious, how can we understand also the point of karma and those people who see taking birth in the Dhamma? When they speak to attach to me, yeah.
Well, it's the same kind of experience that we have, that we're acting as devotees. And as long as we're acting as devotees, then Krishna is taking, we're getting some special treatment. In other words, we're guaranteed to come back, for instance, as devotees again, somewhere. As long as we're actually on that level of acting devotion. Now, because our devotion is mixed, we'll also come back, as Prabhupada said, that one should not be, in the Bhagavad Gita, one should not be fearful that even if one neglects his prescribed duties, he may have to come back and get the reactions for it. So Prabhupada writes in the purport that one should not be concerned about that, because even if one is low birth in his next lifetime, then pure devotional service will continue. So Krishna is taking into account both things, our activities and whatever we're doing in devotion. So how he does that, you'd have to ask him, but he's quite good at it. So similarly, people come to the Dham, no one comes to the Dham by accident. Kansa tried to come to the Dham, and he was stopped immediately. And he was told he couldn't do that. He couldn't come to the Dham. As a matter of fact, as soon as Kansa tried to get to the Dham, then I believe that he bathed in the river, in one of the rivers, and he became a gopi, he became a woman. It was quite embarrassing to Kansa. And then he was brought to Srimati Radharani, and she told him, you know, we'll help you, but just don't come back here again. So he went and they bathed him again, he became Kansa, and he never came back to her. So there's some special place called the Dham. And therefore, special things go on, and people who are out there can't be there by accident. There's something special about them. Although, if they do things that are not proper, then Krishna will give them some special reaction to help them make some progress, give up their bad habits, and make progress in devotional service again. Therefore, although we don't appreciate people's sinful activities in the Dham, but we should also appreciate the fact that they're in the Dham, and that Krishna will take care of them. He's not, doesn't depend upon us to correct everyone in the Dham. Therefore, when Sanatana Goswami was going to Vrindavan, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him that don't associate with the Vrindavasis, they're very intimately. Said they're of a different quality, they have a different mentality, and you know, therefore you should don't associate very intimately with them. Take shelter of Rupa Sanatana there. Otherwise we may commit offenses. And at the same time we think, oh, everyone is a pure devotee in the Dham. Just like when I went there, I was told that everything's offered in the Dham. So you can go to all the sweet shops because all the rascals and everything there is offered to Krishna. So someone may think like that, but I don't think we should think like that. If we buy something from the shop there, we should offer it to Krishna. Nor should we look around and think, well, they're all pure devotees. If you go there, you can find a lot of them smoking. They have marijuana plants there, and they think Oh, maybe this is one of Krishna's devotees' pastimes in Vrindavan. So we have to be non-critical at the same time, we have to be discriminative. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grandharaj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.